The Waddle and Sylvie podcast is presented by DraftKings Sportsbook app.
Use promo code WMVP.
Tune in every Friday for the official Waddle and Sylvie Same Game Parlay on the DraftKings Sportsbook app.
21 years or older, Illinois only. Eligibility and terms at DraftKings.com/football terms.
Third down and nine. Fields has time. Looking deep. Not there. Bernard chasing him. Fields eludes him. Fields is going to take off. Fields has room to run. He's got the first down. Into Houston territory and out of bounds. Herbert. Inside the 10. Still going at the 5. Turns his legs. And he's in. Touchdown, Chicago. Ebner, the running back, on second and 11. Fields fires over the middle, and it's intercepted. Picked off by Jalen Petrie, who lost the football but picks it back up. Mills throws up in the air and intercepted by Eddie Jackson. It is a touchback as Jackson comes up with his 12th career INT. Pierce behind Heck, and he is in for a touchdown. First NFL touchdown for Damian Pierce. It's Herbert on first down. He's got some room. Big haul for Herbert. Herbert into Houston territory. And Herbert is finally taken down by Derek Stingley. Pettis is back deep for the Bears. It's a fake. Fake punt up the middle, and the Texans have it. 6 to start the quarter. Fields deep over the middle looking for Mooney. Intercepted by Petrie. His second of the day. Petrie on the return and down at the 39-yard line. Trefield on 3rd and 1. Mills pass deflected. Intercepted. Roquan Smith. And Mills makes the tackle. Santos for the win. Win at the buzzer.
2-1.
Victory and Monday, buddy.
Atop
Victory Monday.
The NFC North.
Have you ever been this perplexed about sports?
I don't know
the right way to describe it. Like, of course, you're always glad that your favorite team wins, but in the process, I guess it is, Jeff, that as I've said as the season began, wins and losses weren't the most important thing to me. And I advertise that as an odd perspective.
Mm-hmm.
Because of who they define themselves as. They were a team, and it's what I wanted them to do. Rebuild, full rebuild. We had gone through the process with the previous regime of, you know, Band-Aid on head wounds and, you know, cut and paste and all that stuff, and it didn't work. So let's finally clear the deck. Let's get ourselves pointed in the right direction. So I like the process. So wins and losses aren't even that important to me. I like the fact that they've won 2 games, but I'm still left wanting more. And here's the deal too. Like, the run pass balance wasn't as disturbing to me this week. What I came away most, you know, disappointed about was their lack of aggression at the end of the first half. At the end of the day, what did they have? They had like 64 plays, and I think they probably called 22 or 23 passes, right? Because some of the passes turn into quarterback runs, some of them are sacks. So maybe 24, 25, I don't know, however many. It's still below 50-50.
Yeah, but far below that.
Right.
Yes.
But my point is like, be careful with coaching the aggression out of an aggressive player. And I think it's something that, like you said earlier, that we were talking about it at the break. A guy like Trent Dilfer said it was something that he says was negatively affected him when he came into the league.
Yes, he came into the league with Tampa Bay, a first-round quarterback, had played his entire career aggressively. He had the arm strength to threaten people downfield. He would go for the kill shots.
Yeah.
And then he came into the league as a rookie. And this happens with a lot of rookie quarterbacks. NFL coaches are so consumed with winning and not making mistakes, right?
Right.
They don't want to lose the turnover battle. And that's understandable. And so they coach the aggression out of young quarterbacks who have played their entire lives aggressively because they always were the best athletes on the field. And then they get into this rhythm where they're making mistakes. They're told not to throw the ball, not to throw into coverage, even if they maybe can make throws like that. And then they're questioning everything they've done. They've spent their entire life training to play football one way.
Yeah.
And then I think that might be what we saw a little bit of yesterday, Justin Fields questioning himself. Because, again, There's when you're an elite quarterback, especially like someone like Justin Fields, who plays in an elite program like Ohio State.
Elite at the collegiate level.
Yes. And so you've never really faced adversity. You've always been the best athlete on the field. Your arm was always enough, for the most part, where you could throw to other elite athletes who would beat their men, and it wasn't difficult. And every quarterback's got to go through that growing process, but unfortunately for Justin now, he doesn't have the weaponry who's going to go out there and win one-on-one battles. So if he makes a mistake, I think it weighs on him more heavily here.
Well, yeah, and it also weighs on him because he comes from an environment where they relied on him to be the one developing or to deliver the big play. And now what they've done is they've taken the ball out of his hands mostly because they're concerned that right now he's not in a good spot. So again, like as I said, what probably left me wanting more was more their lack of aggression at the end of the first half than the overall run-pass balance. I get when you're running the ball down someone's throat, there's going to be a tendency to continue to run the ball. I get that. There will come a point in time where teams will have more success slowing down the Bears' running game, and you're going to have to throw it more. And at that point, I hope the same aggressive nature that existed in Justin as a collegiate player and maybe even last year still exists in him. And I think that that's kind of where my concern is.
And at 2-1, the Bears' schedule now sets up where they head to New York next week to take on the Giants on Sunday after the Giants will be playing tonight on Monday Night Football. So it will be a short week for the Giants. The Giants will have Daniel Jones in all likelihood under center for them. Then you head to Minnesota where you'll get Kirk Cousins. Then Thursday Night Football, so a short week, but you're at home hosting the Commanders, who obviously have Carson Wentz, who makes his own mistakes and foibles each and every week for the most part. And then potentially you will head to New England to take on a Patriots team
led by
Brian Hoyer.
Yes.
Or some dude with the, I think,
Mac Jones has a severe high ankle sprain.
Yeah, so the likelihood of him playing. And then we'll see what happens with Dallas. Will Dak Prescott be back or will Cooper Rush be under center? The next five games, the quarterbacks potentially on the slate for the Bears, they're all very beatable options. Will Justin Fields, though, be allowed to go toe-to-toe with any of these quarterbacks, or will he be asked to just manage the football game?
Listen, if you told me at the beginning of the year that they would be 2-1, averaging 78 yards per game through the air, I would have told you you're crazy. If you're telling me they're going to win five games doing the same thing, averaging 78, 80 yards per game through the air, I'm still going to say that's highly unlikely. Even against lesser opponents, at some points the regression occurs and normalcy reappears. So we'll see. I mean, I really don't. I don't know how to feel about. I feel this way about it. I want to see them give him more leeway and let him play more. Because I think his development is the most important commodity of the 2022 season. But I do understand why the coaching staff, their job is to get dubs. And so far, they're winning at a 67% clip.
Well, call me R.P. McMurphy because the Bears are 2-1 and they've got a slate of games that are all very winnable over the next month. So it'll be interesting. Walt's on the south side. Walt, you're on Waddle and Sylvie. Miller in for Sylvie today. What's up, bud?
What's going on, guys? How you doing?
Good. Hey, Walt.
All right, wish me luck. I'll be tailgating in MetLife Stadium next week. First of all, I'm just wondering, why is it every time Justin Fields goes to the sideline, he meditates instead of looking at the tablet? You all have a great day.
Yeah, thanks for the call, Walt. I think he spends plenty of time looking at the tablet. I think he spends plenty of time talking to his coaches. When you get a snapshot, it's a three-hour-plus game. You get a snapshot of any quarterback sitting on the sidelines, you can come to some conclusion that really may not be representative of how that person actually spends their downtime.
Yes.
I don't have any problem with his work ethic. I don't have any problem with how he studies during the game, after the game. His performance just is lacking right now. That's the only thing that I have a problem with. And
my only read is that I'm just concerned for his confidence level, you know, and
he looked shook. Yesterday's the first time, even when he was like, listen, maybe if my memory's not good enough, we were looking through the list of games that he's played and wondered whether or not that was his worst game. Last year against Tampa, he threw three picks and fumbled twice.
Yes.
That was a difficult game for him to get through. Now, there were some other moments. I think he threw for a couple hundred yards in that game and completed 22 passes. But that was a disastrous game. I don't believe I ever saw him kind of look the way he looked during the game and after the game. And that would be a concern for me that
a kid that has done so many wonderful things and great things on the field at different levels who's struggling now. It's the first time I've seen him shook.
Yeah, and I don't, like, the one thing I do, he needs to have, you have to have patience with a young quarterback, give them the opportunity to grow and learn, but I don't want him to lose that confidence because then all of a sudden, if you're questioning yourself, you enter a whole new area of, you know, sports psychology. Listen, where you could start to become concerned.
The first interception was he looked like he was throwing it to
wobbled.
A spot.
Yeah, the ball wobbled, too.
Yeah, that, like, you can't go into a shell and then not even attempt that throw in the future because you're worried about making a mistake. You just got to put your foot in the ground. You've got to rely on better fundamentals and better mechanics and throw that ball and just be more accurate. When he has limited success and he's had the struggles that he's had and you're only letting him throw the football 15, 17 times a game, I think you're going to find a kid that's more reluctant to even push the ball downfield because at some point he's going to be afraid to make a mistake and you become a product of your own concern.
Let's head on down to the bayou and say hello to John, who's in Louisiana. Hey, John.
Hey, guys. How you doing?
Good, John.
Hey, just reading the play-by-play over the first three games here, going back to the 49ers, Justin, it looks like they called 28 pass plays for him that game when he only threw 17. And then you go to Green Bay where he only throws 11, and it looked closer to 20 pass plays called. And then yesterday against the Texans, it was another 28 pass plays roughly called. And he's only throwing the ball 17 times. So it seems like he's more willing to just either take a sack or take off with his legs like 41% of the time. So, I mean, how do you develop that and how do you keep him in the pocket to actually make a throw versus running?
Well, it's a really good question, John. The first thing I would say is even if you, like I said earlier, what did they run, 62 plays or 64 plays yesterday? Even if, let's say, 25 of them were called, because he ended up only throwing it 17 times. So let's say another 8 times he was either sacked or he tucked and he ran. You're still below 50%. So my only point there is like, if you're limiting the passing attempts to the passes called, I think you're really slowing down his development or you're not really seeing what he's capable of doing. But these are all valid questions.
62 plays run.
Yeah,
by the Bears.
And as I said earlier, look, I had more issue in terms of their overall approach yesterday. I had more issue with them kind of going into a shell at the end of the first half than I did the pass-run ratio. Like, I just want them, hey, listen, if not against the Texans, then against who?
Exactly.
You had 3 timeouts. You had an opportunity at the very least. Show some confidence in your offense. Even mix it up. But don't go into a shell. But again, I understand why the coaching staff wants to do it. You're trying to get a W. You want to get in there, and you want to do some adjustments, and you don't want anything bad to happen. So,
I guess the point is too, you're trailing 14-13 at halftime, and we played you Matt Eberflus's explanation, but the reality is, again, it's the Houston Texans here. You found a way to win this game, but the Texans if they go out and execute. They could easily have won that game 23-20 if they don't, you know, shoot themselves in the foot on the final drive there. So maybe you make the argument, listen, by playing this conservatively, we put ourselves in a position to win the game.
There's no doubt.
But at the end of the day, it is the Houston Texans. Right. We all know what they're trotting out there. You need to do better than just beating them 23-20 if ultimately you have aspirations of getting anywhere past, you know, anything more than, like, battling for 500.
They get to the Super Bowl and win the Super Bowl with this game plan, I will apologize there. I will walk up to Hallis Hall and apologize to everyone and just tell them, look, I missed this completely. I was more concerned with the development of your young quarterback, and I underestimated you guys and your ability to actually win football games because you're in the middle of a rebuild. If that happens, I will do it. I just don't believe over the course of a 17-game schedule that this style is going to end up winning more than you lose. And in the process, what do you accomplish? Look, you're getting nothing out of Darnell Mooney. Finally, Cole Kmet had a couple of catches, but at some point, you're going to have to kind of open some things up a little bit and evaluate your guys. That's all.
Maurice in Hillside, what's going on, bud?
Hey, guys. So thanks for taking my call. Sure. I think we're losing the big picture here. This team is not supposed to win more than six and a half games. That's the book on them. So I don't know why this expectation of postseason in the first year when we got new players, half the team is new, coaches are new, management's new, everything is new. And we got these expectations. I want them to get better, and I know their offense sucks, but if they get to two more games out of the next three and they're 4-2, that is definitely a win.
Certainly, if they find themselves 4-2 after six games.
Wait, I was going to say, Maurice, it's a very good point, but where do you think this team, if you have to project, because that's what all we can do. If this team...
The way they're playing now, they could win 3 or 4 more games. I mean, the teams are going to get better as the season goes on, so they're not going to be able to win games like this. But the over-under is 6.5, so what is the... If they get to the over-under and maybe win 6 or 5 games, that's what they're supposed to do.
But Eberflus, Getsy, Ryan Poles, Alan Williams, none of those guys are looking at the Vegas over-under total and saying, let's just beat that and we'll call it a successful season. For me, I don't give a damn if they win 4 or 5 games. If they find out what Justin Fields is as their quarterback, and I don't know, I guess you won yesterday's game. Did we learn anything more about Justin Fields yesterday than what we already knew?
Well, we know that if he gets hit too many times, he gets more tentative. So the offensive line collapsing on him is definitely not contributing to him being a better quarterback. And we're not going to fix that during the season, so I'm not sure where we can go.
Well, there are other times, too, Maurice, where he does have plenty of time and he does have open receivers and he is making mistakes as well. And the only way you find out whether or not you have the capacity to improve is to continue doing those things in game situations.
And listen, no quarterback's ever going to have anything perfect. There's always going to be issues surrounding, you know, whether sometimes at times, like I know Yurko, I know you were texting us yesterday, Larry Borum having some issues as a pass protector for you for the Bears.
In other moments, you see Larry Borum creating space in the run game.
Exactly.
I mean, so
like, you know, for the limitations, like there's very, you know, there's only so many all-pro, you know, offensive linemen out there. You can't always be blessed to have, you know, you're not going to have 4 or 5 on that line. You're going to have to live with some of the flaws that every player has. But if Larry Borum can help Khalil Herbert run for 157 yards, chances are you're going to try and minimize his limitations and utilize him on the offensive line.
Let me just play hypothetical. If somehow, some way, the Houston Texans win that game 23-20 as opposed to losing 23-20, what's the narrative?
Oof. There's no confusion. We are crushing the Bears today for losing at home to the Texans and not letting Justin Fields at least attempt more passes in a game where, again, I'm looking at the Texans, and me personally, outside of like the lack, they're the only team I look at and say they might have less overall talent on their roster than the Bears. That's how I look at them.
Yeah, I mean, my concern level is the same, regardless of the outcome of the game. Like, glad they get a W. My concern level is no different whether they have won that game or lost that game.
Yes.
Do you understand what I'm saying?
Absolutely.
Like, listen, I get it. Your job is to win the game. But me sitting here, whether or not my confidence level or my concern level with the overall direction of the team and what their future is going to be with Justin Fields, the W or the L doesn't change because he really had no impact on the outcome of that game.
Yeah.
In a big way.
And based on what you've put together with this roster, I don't see how, you know, if I'm Matt Eberflus, I know I need to win football games. But I also know that in the first year, my most important job is assessing what Justin Fields is capable of. And if he's the guy I can build a real offensive, you know, an elite offense around. That's what I want to do this season more than anything else.
But when he steps into that locker room and he talks to his guys at a team meeting, Justin's 1 of 53. What does he owe to everybody in that room? So, like, I get it. This is the push and the pull.
Yes, I
because
hear you.
his job is to win games.
Let's try Jim, who's in Joliet. Hey, Jim.
Hey, guys. You know, I was at the game and watched it. And I don't, Tom, do you really think it would have been a good idea to hand this kid the ball on his own 35-yard line?
Yes.
With 35 seconds to go. Okay. And his protection was very bad in the first half. And say, okay, kid, I know you're probably going to get crushed, but go ahead and let's see what you got. I think you would have had a better chance of ending up in the blue tent than actually scoring points.
Well, listen, if you're, you know, as our good friend Stacey King used to say, if you're scared, go buy a dog. I mean, you can't play the game tentatively like that, Jim.
That's just,
but Jim, if that's the case, you wouldn't have asked him to drop back and throw it all in the second half either.
No. There's a big difference. When you're going in the second half and dropping back, they don't know for sure you're when you come to the line of scrimmage if you're throwing or not. But if you're saying 35 seconds to go, all you can do is throw the ball. Get back there, kid, and let's see what you can do. You're asking, you know, as a head coach, I'm not doing that to my franchise quarterback. Not until my offensive line can show me, hey, we'll give them 5 seconds to throw the ball, which they did not do the whole first half.
I would argue that playing with pace would actually maybe take some of the sting away from the defense. And Justin seems to be a guy that plays better when they up-tempo things. And by the way, because of his skill set, he's a dual threat. Yep. So it's not just you're dropping back and you're he could drop back,
mm-hmm.
doesn't see what he likes, and could run. The point is that how do we know, how does he know how he'll perform in those moments if you don't give him the opportunity to perform in those moments?
Yeah, like this is not Tom Brady sitting back in the pocket who's either throwing the ball away or finding an open wide receiver.
He's 45 years old. He's been there and done that. Justin's 23 and hasn't done any of that.
But again, that dual threat, which not every quarterback has, gives him the opportunity to keep defenses honest. And listen, 35 seconds, you can rip off a 20, 25-yard run very easily if the defense is so worried about preventing the pass. That's available to him, unlike many in the league. There's very few who can run the ball like he can. Take advantage of it in that situation.
Or do a low-risk, you know, run yes. a few of low-risk plays. Throw a wide receiver screen. Come out and hand the ball, you know, on a jet sweep to Equanimeous St. Brown the way you did earlier. There's so many different things you could do, but at the very least, it's kind of a defeat. And you send a message, trust me, from being on the field in those moments. When they don't show any faith in your ability to move the ball in those situations, your shoulders start to slump and you're like, what are we doing?
Yeah.
Like, give us a shot. Give us a chance. And I, you know, that's all I'm saying. Like, look, I'm not asking them. I said that last week. I'm not asking them to throw it 45 times a game. But.
And in a season when the expectations are already so low, it's a perfect opportunity. You might learn more from a failure in that instance than an actual touchdown drive. Or you might learn something from either situation. You know, but what you can't really learn much from is taking a knee or a quick draw and heading into the locker room at halftime down 14.
And listen, we have a different perspective. I'm sitting at home. You're sitting in the stadium. And we're looking at the game differently than the head coaches. The head coach in that moment, I can guarantee you what he was feeling. We need to get the hell off this field, get in there, do some things, make some adjustments, and not put ourselves in a position to make a negative play that could turn into a score for them in the final seconds of the game. That's the mentality of a coach. His job is to win games.
Don't forget, if you want to come out and see a live Waddle and Sylvie broadcast, this Friday, Sylvie, Carmen, and Yurko are out at Legends Grill and Bar, 6320 Route 53 in Woodridge. Go on out and say hello, Sylvie, Carmen, and Yurko, for a live broadcast. The Nissan Titan Street team will be there, so make sure you join us on Friday out and about in Woodridge. Come see Sylvie, Carmen, and Yurko, who will be filling in for Waddle on Friday. I'm Jeff Mellerin for Sylvie Today. This is Waddle and Sylvie. Waddle's World up next.
Chicago's home for sports is on Twitch. Follow ESPN 1000 Chicago today.
You're listening to Waddle and Sylvie on ESPN 1000, Chicago's home for sports. This is Waddle's World.
And in Chicago, Tom Waddle. He can't run, he's not fast, but he gets open.
Bears legend.
Amazing.
9 career TDs in the NFL.
He caught everything that was thrown and took every hit that they could give him.
Tom Waddle.
Are you not entertained? Are you not entertained?
It's time to find out what's on Tom's mind.
Is that why you are here?
As we go inside Waddle's World.
Yeah, let's do this. Waddle's World, brought to you by our great friends and partners at Wintrust Community Banks. They are Chicago's banks. Find your nearest Wintrust Community Bank. Visit wintrust.com/findus. Member FDIC. Today was Bulls Media Day, correct?
Yeah,
this is correct. Media Day? Was there anything said by AK or Billy Donovan that resonated with anybody? I didn't hear any of it.
A lot of...
By the way, tomorrow I'm sitting in for Jay Hood, who's sitting in for me in the afternoon. So Cap and I are doing 7 to 10. I believe Billy Donovan's joining us at 9 o'clock.
There you go. Hopefully you guys can make him say something interesting so Tyler and I can replay it from 12 to 2
okay,
when
we'll
sit in for Carmen Yerk.
Yeah.
Carmen Yerk are going to be on from 10 to 12 tomorrow. We'll be broadcasting all day from Sanctuary Golf Course in New Lenox for the ESPN Chicago Open.
Follow the Wednesday $39 special, I think, Sanctuary Golf
Course. There you go. Love it. Love their shirts, too.
Golfer Bob has been a fabulous supporter of this station, so we appreciate him.
So AK talked about Lonzo Ball and he said, and why they're delaying the surgery until now. And he said they gave him every opportunity to get back on the court without doing the surgery. That's why they waited until now to do that.
Doesn't sound like anything was said to make anybody feel any more optimistic about the outlook.
No.
Is that accurate?
I would agree with
you.
We're
in a holding pattern.
Yep.
And by the way, in the meantime, the rest of the East has gotten better.
Yes.
The Bulls have.
What was the Bulls seed this past year? Were they
six.
Five?
They were the sixth seed, remember? Yep.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, because they avoided the play-in game. But yes, the I thought it was six, and the Bucks.
It was six. Yep. Yeah, and the Bucks were the third.
Bucks were the three. So.
Well, I mean, listen, Zach got his max, right? So
he did.
Now you know what? Wouldn't you say that the highlight of the upcoming season has to be, or the thing that you focus on most is Zach taking that next step? I mean, hopefully.
I was going to say, is that possible?
Well, I suppose. Isn't that would be the most... I mean, if Lonzo Ball is still going to be questionable throughout the duration of the first part of the season...
Yeah.
How do you get better?
I think Io is the... If I'm somehow finding a path to the Bulls getting better, I think Io needs to become a better shooter, and maybe you can unlock something with him. That's my... I don't know. That's the path to how the Bulls get better somehow, some way, because... There really haven't been any key additions. Do you think DeMar DeRozan is capable of playing better than he did last year?
Listen, as good as he was fabulous last year. The odds of him at what age 33?
Yeah,
having another career year. I mean, look, that's asking too much of him.
I think so. Unless he somehow, some way, he improves as a shooter where he can extend that his to the 3-point range.
Yeah, but that doesn't happen.
But
at this
that's
age.
The thing is, at this point, he is.
So I said
is.
The thing that you have to lean most on is that. Zach
gets better.
Yeah, takes that next step.
I did see Alex Caruso mentioned he was considering changing his jersey number to number 6 to honor Bill Russell, but he was told he couldn't because his jersey is amongst the top 75 in sales. So I found that interesting.
I was surprised by that.
Well,
the top 75?
I wasn't surprised that Alex Caruso, who everyone I think admires the way he plays, I wasn't surprised he was in the top 75 in sales. I was surprised he couldn't change his number because of that.
I knew about that rule.
I did not know about that.
If you said top 10, okay. Top 75, that's how it extends out to?
Well, it's because it's a supply issue where the NBA store doesn't want to be stuck now with all of these Caruso jerseys with a voided number.
Multi-billion dollar entity doesn't want to be stuck.
It all comes down to cash.
Yes.
All comes down to cash.
I think the way you can get out of it is if you buy them out.
Yeah. Yeah. You just have to supplement the losses.
You just have to eat a lot of your own jerseys.
You just give them a big check.
Yep.
Well, thanks. By the way, the NFL is officially replacing the Pro Bowl with the Pro Bowl games featuring week-long skills competitions and a flag football game.
I applaud this decision.
I agree. The new event will replace the full contact showcase that was started in 1951. It will be renamed the Pro Bowl Games and will feature AFC and NFC players showcasing their football and non-football skills and challenges over several days. The 2023 games will be held in Las Vegas and the flag football game at Allegiant Stadium February 5th.
Growing up as a 10, 11, 12, 13-year-old, I have much fonder memories of the NFL quarterback challenge.
Yeah.
Way back on, it was on NBC when Dan Marino and John Elway. And
Trying to throw the ball through a wooden door.
With some paint on the tip of the football and they would hit these targets. I have far more fond memories of that than any Pro Bowl I can ever remember. So
guess who's in charge of all of this?
Peyton Manning.
Peyton Manning and his Omaha Productions company will help shape programming and promote the event's content throughout the week. Manning, a 14-time Pro Bowl pick during his Hall of Fame career, will provide his perspective and will also be part of the coaching staff for the flag football game.
But he will coach remotely from his home in Denver.
I don't think that's true, but that was funny. That was entertaining.
Eli will be the opposing coach from his home in New York.
The Dolphins say quarterback Tua Tagovailoa is not in concussion protocol. according to Mike McDaniel.
Do you believe them is the question?
Well, I mean here's the deal. The league is now supposed... I mean, my guess is the system's in place where when he was walked up... I don't know if you saw the game. He got up and he stumbled and then he walked a little bit and they stumbled again.
Yes.
They took him into the locker room. He's walked up the tunnel by a member of either the Dolphins training staff or the coaching staff. And once he's in there, he's supposed to be, and I assume he was evaluated by an independent
neurologist,
medical professional.
That's the protocol
and
that's
in
place.
And it was clear.
Yes.
Now, the NFL has actually, the NFLPA has asked for an investigation.
They have.
But the Dolphins are saying that Tua was not isn't in concussion protocol and was not...
I will say this. I'm
suffering from concussion issues.
I'm curious to see the outcome of this investigation. Aren't you? Because based on what we saw...
Yeah, but if it's an independent medical professional...
Then he passed
the test.
That's my suspicion, is that I can't imagine a, quote, independent neurologist would send him back out there if he didn't pass all the tests. So... In that regard, I'm curious to see what the outcome is.
I'm curious to see what the information is coming out of that investigation. I can't assume that there was hanky-panky there's protocol involved.
And listen, the other thing is I'm glad they have this process, too, where it's still possible for a player, a critical player, your starting quarterback, to go pass a test and be able to go back out there and perform. I'm glad they have that in place because it beats the alternative where there's nothing in place, where you just have something happens, it looks like you're woozy or you need to come off the field, and then you're ruled out completely for the game. That's a huge competitive disadvantage for any team that, you know, could potentially just have an unfortunate circumstance.
Mike McDaniel said that he cleared concussion protocol twice on Sunday, yesterday, so... Are the Dolphins the only undefeated team in the league?
No. Eagles, too.
The Eagles as well.
And could be the Giants.
True.
Ooh, that's right.
If, question for you, if the Dolphins are the only undefeated team, do the 72 Dolphins pop champagne if they eventually lose? Assuming, you know
what... they do. It's about them.
Is that petty? I know. Mercury Morris, is he still with us?
Is
Mercury,
I think so.
I think so, right? Because he's still popping champagne after every...
I think so.
I kind of want to see that this year.
What was the highlight of your Saturday college football watching? I hate to tell you that what stood out to me most was not a positive thing. The Northwestern Wildcats. After losing to Southern Illinois last week because of a wonderful Southern pep talk given by Mark Silverman. The Wildcats followed up that loss with a loss to Miami of Ohio. In Evanston.
Yes. I made fun of Teddy Greenstein yesterday on the pregame show with Dion. I was asking what the hell's going on there.
Miami ran it for 216 yards on Northwestern.
I'll say this, too. The celebration afterwards, like in the bars downtown, you would have thought they won the college football playoff. They were out and about.
The Miami of Ohio, the Red Hawks?
All the Red Hawk fans, they were out and about yesterday.
You know what?
On Saturday.
I think the highlight for me was Clemson's OT victory over Wake Forest.
Yeah.
That's what I was watching the most of on Saturday.
Bucky got kicked right in the nuggets.
Bucky's still sucking.
Ohio State came out and made that one a laugher. And Iowa finally scored a few points, didn't they?
Hey, how about that,
Hawkeyes? 27 against Nevada. Is that who they had?
Sure.
No, you're right. Oh, it was Rutgers.
Yeah, I was like, I'm not locked in.
How many did they score against Rutgers?
They
scored 20, I think it was in that neighborhood. Yeah, 27,
24. The week before against Nevada, right?
But they did not score an offensive touchdown in the first half.
I'm not going to lie. I'm not carving out a whole bunch of time to watch Iowa Hawkeye football.
You shouldn't.
All of my knowledge of Iowa Hawkeye football comes from our text chain. That's it. Based on what I've seen from you guys, I'm not missing much.
You're not missing much. And again, we'll continue to go around the NFL. But what stood out to you yesterday? I will tell you the thing that stood out most to me, other than like kind of how the Dolphins and
Bills
game ended, was the continued marvelous performance of Lamar Jackson, who had four passing touchdowns and also ran for better than 100 yards and a rushing TD.
Yes, including an
early season runaway MVP, safe to say.
You know what?
I know that Randy Merkin, our good friend Merck, usually
likes to, yes. to claim someone as an MVP this early in the season, and I try not to do it.
Premature merculation. Yeah. That's what you're guilty of over there.
But Lamar Jackson has come out. And
I will say, well, it didn't help Josh Allen's cause that they lost yesterday, but he still put up some numbers.
Yeah, but he threw it 60-plus times.
I mean, and only one, and it wasn't through three games. How about that?
Well, that's true.
Yeah, so it's what stood out to me was forget the fact that the Bills failed to clock it correctly in the fourth. How about the fact that they failed to clock it at the end of the first half?
Yeah,
which that's if you missed it, it wasn't just that they failed to stop the clock at the end of the game to get the game tying field, or I'm sorry, to go for the game winning field goal. Well,
they were out of timeouts at that point.
Yes,
and they couldn't get the ball spotted and I thought there was a chance that the kid McKenzie could have if he just kept
out of bounds.
Yeah.
But the reason I think Ken Dorsey lost his mind was because it also happened in the first half where they were set up for what would have been like a 51, 52-yard field goal. Yeah. But Josh Allen went to go spike the ball, and it slipped out of his hands because of the heat, and he wasn't able to clock it. So then he throws it over to Stephon Diggs, completes a pass, and the clock runs out. It happened twice to them where they failed to get the field goal off.
Isn't that the biggest discrepancy in yards and plays?
Oh, plays. Yeah, it
both
was absurd.
Of them and the team actually that had more plays and more yards with that big a discrepancy. It's only happened one other time, right? And it was another Dolphins game.
The Bills ran 90 plays.
And how many did the Dolphins run?
The Dolphins ran, I believe, 39.
Right. And the discrepancy between the number of plays they won and the yardage gained.
Yes.
Has never been that significant. Where the team that had the more yardage and they had the majority of the plays lost.
Yeah, I know. Well, and honestly, it's crazy. We had another conversation, too, about the Bills game in Miami. When are teams going to start bringing canopies to Miami?
Is there not an... Are you not allowed to do it?
I don't know, but it seems...
Like the building, for people that don't know, the stadium is built in such a way that for an early game...
Yes. In Miami.
In Miami, the Dolphins sideline is in the shade.
Yes, yes.
The opposing team is under the sun.
Yes, sweltering in the heat.
Yes.
And when you have 90-plus degree days, playing football, by the way, and then you run 90 plays, and the other team runs 39 offensively, it's no surprise that the Bills were melting in the heat.
Yes.
I don't understand. Every youth soccer tournament I attend.
Oh yeah, we always had. Yeah, you put tents up.
Yeah, there's big tents on the sidelines for the kids when they're not playing
canopies,
the game.
Some form of canopies.
Are you
not allowed to do it down at the Hard Rock Stadium? I don't know.
Does it affect the vision of the fans? Maybe.
Don't know.
Interesting.
That is a very interesting. All right, we'll continue to spin around the NFL. It wasn't as exciting of a weekend in the NFL in Week 3 as it was in Week 2, but there are still some things to get after. Plus, I also have an update on our chess story and our chess player as well. That seems to be a never-ending saga also. We'll get to that when we come back.
Waddle and Sylvie, weekdays, 2 to 6.
Follow on Twitter at Waddle and Sylvie and at TWaddle87, ESPN 1000.
Chicago's home for sports.
Two updates for you.
Give them to me.
First of all, I think the more important one. NASA is about to crash a spacecraft into an asteroid. I told you about this on a number of occasions last week during Waddle's World. First of a kind maneuver is set for tonight. The crash is planned for 7:15 Eastern, so 6:15 our time.
Okay.
Live coverage will air on NASA TV. I'm sure you have that on your cable. Beginning at 6 p.m. Eastern time. So 5 o'clock our time, if you're interested. The double asteroid redirection test will help determine if intentionally crashing a spacecraft into an asteroid is an effective way to change its course. So if you haven't seen the movie Armageddon, which is kind of, that's what this is. Life imitating art, or vice versa.
The real life version.
Yeah. Do you ever find yourself watching NASA TV?
Never. Never.
Yeah, I think
Do
this
you?
Would be worthy of watching. No, I wouldn't know how to tune it in.
Bring it up?
No. But I think this would be worth it. Like, this is huge. Why are you not moved?
Listen,
if a giant asteroid is hurling, or a meteor, or whatever you want to call it, is hurling towards Earth, it could be what's... If social media doesn't do its job before then, it may be what's, changes the course of society.
Have you not seen Don't Look Up?
I did see that.
It sounds like the real life version.
Yeah, but like this is we're struggling, or we may be able to do this. So why not watch it? Or are you afraid that like Adam Abdallah that you may be being put on?
No,
and not being shown the true.
It's not that.
Video.
I would rather, I think, ignorance is bliss. I'd rather live my life not knowing.
Oh, that, that's great.
You know,
yeah.
Listen, if they can take care of it, great. If they can knock a meteor heading for Earth off its trajectory, and so it doesn't kill us all in a fiery bliss, okay, yeah. Cool. But if it happens, it happens, and so be it.
Magnus Carlsen is the world chess champion I told you about. There have been some scathing accusations from him about an opponent that beat him, a younger player who was less accomplished.
Yes.
Hans Niemann, an American, I believe.
Hans Niemann, yeah.
He says, he's a long letter today. He says, I know that my actions have frustrated many in the chess community. I'm frustrated. I want to play chess. I want to continue to play chess at the highest level in the best events. I do believe that Niemann has cheated more and more recently than he has publicly admitted. His over-the-board progress has been unusual. And throughout our game in the Cup, I had the impression that he wasn't tense or even fully concentrating on the game in critical positions while outplaying me, as in a way I think only a handful of players can do. This game contributed to me changing my perspective. I would think, just on that front, the claim was is that the outrageous claim was
yes.
that Niemann was using anal beads
mm-hmm.
and that had a shock that was administered when certain things were supposed to happen. Wouldn't you think that he would be tense and fully concentrating if, in fact, that claim made by Magnus Carlsen was actually accurate?
Boy, you're really delving deep.
He says, we must do something about cheating, and for my part going forward, I don't want to play against people that have cheated repeatedly in the past because I don't know what they are capable of doing in the future. There's more I would like to say. Ultimately, at this time, I am limited in what I can say without explicit permission from Niemann to speak openly. So far, I have only been able to speak with my actions, and those actions have stated clearly that I am not willing to play chess with Niemann. I hope that the truth of this matter comes out, whatever it may be. This is just a whole piece of paper of crap. And that's the last Magnus Carlsen will get from me. Yes.
No.
Yes.
All these years.
Yes. Unless there are more salacious claims, I will not.
More salacious. Could they be more salacious?
Well, no, I'm just going to say I'm tired of reading his, you know, his whatever, his statement.
So you're Team Niemann. You're Team Niemann.
No, I'm not Team either one of them. I'm just Team not reading any more of the updates because the updates are filled with nothing.
All these
more
years.
More complaining. By whiny chess players.
All these years, I think we're finally getting to the bottom of this. All these years, Sylvie was training to become a grandmaster at chess, and we didn't even know it.
I don't know what that means.
Think about it. All right, Matt Eberflus was asked specifically about his decision to take the ball into the half, to not go for a field goal at the end of the game, and how it helps the development of his young quarterback, Justin Fields. We'll share what he had to say next.